Welcome to another day. The glorious beginning of another day. A little over dramatic there, don't you think? Magnificat Radio at magnificatmedia.com. This is your morning tradition with Mike and Lisa Austin here as we begin the last few days before Lent. It's Magnificat Radio where we are.
Living our faith. Thought I'd join you.
Okay, I was wondering where you went. I didn't look over and you disappeared and then, oh, you're back there. There she is. Ah, man. We're going to have such a great week. A couple of things. Working on putting a few more Lenten-type songs in. A little more chant and things like that. But I'm trying to find more classical works of music for Lent as we start to begin coming up. I think we're going to have Louis Tufari on talking about Ash Wednesday. I think he's going to do something with us tomorrow. And so we're working on that. And Stations of the Cross. So stay tuned for Stations of the Cross coming up.
Beautiful.
As well. So not today, but I mean, I think we'll probably do those on Fridays throughout Lent. And
beautiful.
I'll tell you, you'll hear, it'll be several times during the day, probably a couple of times. You'll have a chance to go through with Stations of the Cross with us. This was produced years ago. Actually, I did it for the little station down in St. Mary's, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have those, and I thought we'd put those on.
Sure, might as well.
Yeah, it'll
be great. Absolutely.
As we get underway. And maybe, I don't know, maybe we could keep those around even after Lent. What do you think?
I think that's a great idea.
You don't have to do Stations of the Cross only during Lent. But
I think Fridays are a good day for
all
that.
Right, we'll do that. Speaking of Stations of the Cross, where did doing the Stations of the Cross in one's home, in one's chapel, in your own church, the stations, where did that come from? We're going to find out today.
Awesome.
Yes. Our good friend, Mr. Robert F. Garrison, is going to join us today from Ridgefield, Connecticut, out at St. Padre Pio Academy. And among other things, we're going to talk about Lent in the Middle Ages. He is a medieval history expert, and we're going to talk about that. Also, coming up later this week is the anniversary of the Lateran Treaty.
Yes.
1929, the Vatican became a sovereign country.
Didn't you say that was Thursday, right?
This Thursday, yes.
Yeah.
On the 11th. And so I wanted to ask him about that and get his take on all of that. Some interesting twists and turns. So Mr. Garrison will be our guest coming up here this morning as we begin the countdown to Lent. Oh, and
couple days.
Carnival. Well, tomorrow is Fat Tuesday.
I know it.
Now, Tuesday's a couple of things. You got in the southern part of the United States, Fat Tuesday, Mardi Gras.
Mm-hmm.
I remember we used to, New Orleans is the big daddy, but we used to go to Galveston, Texas, and they used to have a huge Mardi Gras celebration there, and I can't remember the name of that street. Big parade down the street and everything. It's like a mini New Orleans.
Okay.
Galveston. We've been to Galveston.
Yeah.
So that is tomorrow. It's, if you're Polish, Pączki Day tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
We got to get ours. Lisa's going to go gluten-free pączki, which just seems weird to me, but okay.
If we can find them.
Yeah. Well, I can make you one. I can make you one. So Pączki Day and Carnival. Carnival. I love that. Tomorrow. Hey, by the way, the word carnival, where does that come from?
Uh-huh.
Mr. Garrison will tell us.
Yes.
Coming up this morning. So this is how we roll today here on your morning tradition. Right about now, Lisa, I believe this would be a good time of the morning just to jump right in and ask you the question.
What's that?
How can you know where you're going?
If you don't know where you've been.
That's why we do this day in history.
We made history.
Any day in history.
A day that will go down in history.
History of this day.
This day in history.
This day in history.
Today happens to be the 8th day of February. It is the 39th day in the year of our Lord, 2016. Which was on this date way back in 421. There wasn't even a one in front of the four yet. 421, Constantius III became the co-emperor of the Western Roman Empire.
On this day in 1587, Mary, Queen of Scots, is executed on suspicion of having been involved in the Babington plot to murder her cousin, Queen Elizabeth I.
Hey, off with the head.
Yes.
1693. The College of William and Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia got granted a charter to become a college. Guess who gave them the charter? William and Mary. That'd be King William III and Queen Mary II.
And there you go. On this day in 1855, the Devil's Footprints mysteriously appeared in Southern Devon. On the night of February 8th in 1855, the next night and the next night after that.
Wow.
After heavy snowfall, a series of hoof-like marks appeared in the snow. Houses, rivers, haystacks, and other obstacles were traveled straight over, and footprints appeared on the roof or the tops of snow-covered roofs and high walls which lay in the footprints' path, as well as leading up to and exiting various drain pipes as small as 4 inches in diameter.
And I don't think they've ever come up with anything that said what it was.
So still a mystery.
Devon. Is that Devonshire? Devon.
Oh, what did I say? Devon?
Yeah, Devon.
I think I did.
That's your French coming out. That'd be in England. So all those are folks listening in England. There you go. 1910, this is the day the Boy Scouts of America was incorporated. Mr. William D. Boyce put that one together.
On this day in 1915, D.W. Griffith's controversial film, The Birth of a Nation, premieres in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Is that the one? That was the silent movie. That was the one with the Ku Klux Klan in it, I think.
Was it?
1950, the Stasi, the secret police of East Germany, was established. Oh, great.
On this day, February 8th in 1952, Elizabeth II is proclaimed Queen of the United Kingdom.
And the Queen is still the Queen.
Yes, she is.
Hello, Queenie. Your Grace, it's nice to see you.
All right, sorry about that one. And now you know exactly where you have been. We're going to take a little break, and we're going to come back here, and we're going to get a hold of Mr. Robert F. Garrison. He's like our own personal historian.
Mm-hmm.
Groovy, cool guy. I love this guy's take on stuff, and he is thorough, let me tell you. Where do we get... Well, first of all, I want to ask him about the Lateran Treaty in 1929, and the Vatican became a sovereign nation.
Which is coming up this Thursday.
This Thursday's the anniversary. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Lent as well in the show this morning with Mr. Garrison. So stick around. A lot to learn and a lot to do here on your morning tradition, Magnificat Radio and MagnificatMedia.com, where we are
living our faith.
Oh, man, this is one of my favorite times here on Magnificat Radio and your morning tradition. Mike and Lisa Austin here, where we are
living our faith.
And we're going to talk a little history today. You know, the church is it's nothing but history. I mean, it's everything but history, and it is history. And our friend, Mr. Robert Garrison, joins us again now from Ridgefield, Connecticut, and St. Padre Pio Academy, a medieval history expert, a master's in religious studies, an author, a speaker, and a darn fine individual, too. Mr. Garrison, I just want to throw that in there. You want to put that on your business card?
Oh, man, I'd need something like carved in stone. That was wonderful. Thank you, Mike.
As
they say, the check will be in the mail.
Well, I'm hoping that it doesn't bounce like the last one. No, I'm kidding.
There you go.
So, 1929, February 11th, the Lateran Treaty. This is where the Vatican becomes its own country, really. And I think this gets overlooked quite a bit, and including myself, until I started talking to you. This was a big, huge symbolic deal, wasn't it?
It was. I guess you could say it put period to one period of the church's relationship with Italy. From the time of Italian unification, mm-hmm. The papacy was, in the words of, I guess it was Pope Pius IX who put it that way first, that he was the voluntary prisoner within the Vatican. The papal states, which had occupied most of central Italy, had always been that buffer area that ensured that the papacy was an independent operator, as we would say, that it was not simply the Pope was not simply the chaplain of whatever ruler happened to be ruling the Italian states. And it allowed him to be seen, and also to be, independent of any other political power. Having said that, the papal states are not the point of the church. It wasn't, part of the apostolic commission. But over the course of history, like a real person growing up in his real body in a normal life, the church had acquired these lands, usually by gift. Constantine originally gave some little bit of property to the Pope. Charlemagne later confirmed a lot of the lands of central Italy as being the patrimony of St. Peter, as they called it. Hmm. And over the centuries, it became the Pope's kingdom. I mean, right. that ensured that the papacy, the religious institution, would be surrounded by and basically have some sort of security. Now, needless to say, it was never a great European power. It was never a military, you know, powerhouse.
Right.
Didn't threaten other people. Most of the time, there was a war. They'd usually lose because that wasn't their purpose for existence. And except for under the one of my favorite popes, Julius II, the warrior pope, so excellently played by Rex Harrison in The Agony and the Ecstasy.
Yes, we just saw that the other day.
That's just, you know, it didn't, it played at diplomacy. Diplomacy has always been our best secular game because we're masters at it, as with bureaucracy, since the time of the Romans. But that was the purpose of whether the Papal States be all of central Italy or just the 108 acres of Vatican City. It says the papacy is an independent thing. It is not subject to any foreign power, and therefore it is able to do its religious activities, conduct its religious activities on that basis. I mean, remember the so-called Babylonian captivity of the papacy for 70 years. The Pope was living in Avignon in France.
Mm-hmm.
And the big thing was, well, you know, the Pope is just the puppet of the French king. Now, that, you know, in appearance, certainly that was the case. It wasn't quite that blatant. Avignon happened to be one of the Papal States, which is something we never learn. It had been a piece of land that I believe Charlemagne had given to the Pope as part of his territory. So even though he was more close, shall we say, to the King of France, the popes who lived in Avignon were relatively independent. It just didn't look good from the point of view of the rest of the Christian world.
Right.
But having this Vatican State, small as it is, says we are not subject to the laws of Italy. We are not subject to whoever's ruling Italy at the moment. We can act independently.
Was there ever a time when, okay, so now we've got Vatican City, the 108 acres. Was there ever a time they had any sort of a viable army for defense? Because those guys in the fancy uniforms that we were just talking about, it was off the air, we were talking about, you know, Michelangelo designed the cool uniforms.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I said they weren't a military powerhouse, but, you know, the papacy did have armed forces. Mm-hmm. And during the Renaissance, when things were really turbulent in Italy, that's when they really were beefed up. And that's when the core of the Swiss Guard was formed. They were originally mercenaries, but they were the best mercenaries in Europe. And to have a Swiss Guard meant you could count on. The two most famous Swiss Guards were the Swiss Guards of the Pope and the Swiss Guard of the Kings of France. And if you remember, during the French Revolution, the one unit that literally fought to the last man and was butchered and massacred to the last man was the French King's Swiss Guard, fell to the last man defending the monarchy and defending the king. And in Switzerland, in Lucerne, there is this beautiful monument. It's called the Lion of Lucerne. That was built as a commemoration of the Swiss Guard, and it depicts a fallen lion with, I believe, spears and things in its back, and under its paws, in its, you know, its dying moment as it's defending them, the shield bearing the arms of Switzerland and the arms of the Kingdom of France. It's a beautiful monument. You have to look it up and see the picture of it.
I love it.
I saw it in person, like unexpectedly, during the trip to Europe when I was in high school, and it's like everybody else who says, oh, what a cool line, and I'm like, I was like, it was a religious experience for me. But I have a little replica of it up on one of my shelves here. But so there was a military, and you know, it was when it had a good general, it was capable of defending the Papal States. As I said, Julius II took it out himself and made sure the other city states didn't more or less mess with the papacy. And, you know, it was sufficient to its needs. By the 19th century, obviously, it was not as up-to-date as, let's say, the army of Piedmont, northern Italy, that was, you know, attempting to take over the place. It could have done the job if it had had allies, but it had no allies at that point, except for the southern kingdom, the kingdom of the two Sicilies, which the northern folks made sure they took out before they took the papacy, before they took the papal states.
Why did it take until 1929 to officially state that the Vatican was a sovereign country? It seems to me that this would have happened way before then.
Well, partly because the popes, to be fair, Pius IX certainly was not going to say, okay, guys, you can have all of central Italy, just give me 108 acres. He would defend the fact that this was an illegal seizure of a sovereign territory by a foreign power till the day he died. And the popes who followed him, it was an illegal seizure of a state recognized by the rest of the world, even for a while by the United States, until Abraham Lincoln ended diplomatic relations with the Vatican, which is a little interesting aside there.
Yeah, that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
That's a whole other story. They wouldn't be restored until Ronald Reagan restored diplomatic, I believe it was Reagan, diplomatic recognition. But anyway, so it was that. It was an illegal seizure of a sovereign state. And Pius IX, Leo XIII, they, you know, felt honor-bound that they could not really give up the claim, at least, to the legitimacy of the old papal states. Now, needless to say, they didn't do anything to, like, undermine the Italian state once it was established. Technically, the King of Italy, Victor Emmanuel II, had been excommunicated, and yet had a regular correspondence with the Pope, and the Pope said, don't worry, there'll be somebody there when you die, because I know you're not really a bad chap, but whatever. And the kings of Italy had that odd relationship with the papacy. Umberto I, who was a very well-loved king, he's called Umberto the Good. He was assassinated in 1900 by an anarchist that were running around in the late 19th century.
Those guys were everywhere. Weren't they?
They were everywhere. This fellow, and his name escapes me. He tried to assassinate the Russian Tsar, couldn't get near him. He had thoughts some years before try to assassinate Napoleon III of France. He'd come to the United States for a while looking for somebody to assassinate, and then eventually ended up back in Italy and murdered the king. But, the happy life of anarchists.
Yeah.
But Umberto was a very religious man, and then, there was sort of an unofficial, cordial understanding going on, but it was irregular, and they wanted to have it settled. And by 1929, they realized they weren't going to get the old papal states back. And the Pope, Pius XI, was looking for some arrangement, and the Prime Minister of Italy at that time, one Signore Benito Mussolini, was looking for something that would make Italian Catholics happy with his government. So everything just fell into place.
Oh. And there you have it. And 1929.
Divine providence, yeah. Huh?
And then, do they celebrate this date? I don't know if there's a celebration.
I don't know if there's a celebration about it. They built one of the biggest roads, which was built, and it is still there, and it is one of the, you see it whenever you see Vatican City, when you get the shot from the Pope's window, straight out onto St. Peter's, there's this huge, long avenue.
Yeah.
That was built after the treaty was signed by Mussolini. It's called, now, my Italian is horrible, the Via della Conciliazione, the Avenue of the Reconciliation.
You call that bad Italian? That was great, man.
And I probably left a vowel out here or there, but it's that beautiful, beautiful, huge avenue, and it leads straight up to the gates of St. Peter.
Yes.
Neat.
And needless to say, that didn't mean all was, peace and happiness between the Pope and Mussolini's government all the time.
Right.
But, again, as an independent power, as an independent operator, I hate that word, but it's a good one here, the Pope had the ability to say and do things as a sovereign that could not be hindered and could not be interfered with, within limits.
And don't you think that there is a bit of divine protection in the form of, and we were talking about the size of the army, it doesn't really have an army, the Swiss Guard is symbolic and that, but you mentioned before a picture during World War II of Nazi tanks outside the Vatican and a couple of Swiss Guard guys in the fancy outfits with machine guns holding the tanks off. They didn't go in. They could have run right over.
It was, you know, the moral power of the papacy, which is its greatest power, even, you know, in the days when there were popes whose personal morals maybe were not that admirable, is immense. And as far as devotion, I mean, we see the Swiss in their fancy dress all the time. Make no doubt about it. I mean, they do have their modern kit, as they say.
Yeah.
And if called on, maybe you would be messing with the wrong guys if you tried to take them on in any kind of a fair fight, even an unfair fight. I mean, they're most every year they have their new recruits come in and they have their special blessing with the Pope to commemorate during the 16th century when Rome was sacked in one of the crazy, confused battles of the Renaissance, Reformation. You had an army, technically the army of the Holy Roman Emperor, made up, unfortunately, of a lot of Lutherans who were not real happy with the papacy and who decided as long as they were in central Italy, well, heck, let's sack Rome and find the Pope and hang him. And they stormed the place, and it's world famous. The Swiss Guard, literally, one group surrounded the Pope and like human shields, marched him across the Passetto, which is a raised passageway between Rome and the Castel Sant'Angelo, which was still a fortress at the time. And the rest of the guards literally stood on the steps of St. Peter, giving them time to get away, and I think they 147, 150, to a man, they were slaughtered.
Wow.
And every year, that is commemorated and remembered. So
that is amazing.
Have no doubt, if called on, they would do the same today.
Beautiful. We're talking with Robert Garrison. He is you are now our Magnificat historian, man. I love this. We're going to take a break and come back in just for a second. Hey, do you have some time to talk about Lent in the Middle Ages at all?
No, I think we could come up with something for that.
All right,
sure.
Hang on just a second. Mr. Garrison, this is awesome. I love this. We're going out to Ridgefield, Connecticut. We'll be back in a minute here on Magnificat Radio, MagnificatMedia.com, where we are
living our faith.